And of course, Cheryl Jones with us. We're going to flip the switch and turn it into open lines this hour. So jump on board. She's got all kinds of possibilities with UFOs and you name it. She's got it on Coast to Coast. By the way, say a little prayer for our Coast guest, Steve Quayle. He's been in the hospital with pneumonia, very serious. And they thought it was COVID, but he says, no, it's pneumonia. But he's fighting. He says no breathing machines or ventilators for him. He's going cold turkey on that. But say a little prayer for Steve. And welcome back. Cheryl Jones with us. Cheryl, can you believe we're into October now?
The time is flying. Not only that, I believe it's beginning to feel like a parallel universe we're living in.
No doubt. And now November, Thanksgiving Thursday, is your normal day on, your night on. So you're going to be on with us, right?
Yes, I will be. I will be here.
All right, very good. And you, what do you think you're going to be talking about? Do you know yet?
I don't know yet. There's several good possibilities. I just haven't narrowed it down to which one will be the one that we will focus on that evening.
We're taking open lines with Cheryl Jones right now. The phone lines are now open, so jump on board. If you had to categorize your favorite topics, which would they be? Maybe your top three to five.
Well, they're different topics. It's really impossible to pick just one. I love the paranormal, the supernatural, the mysterious, the unexplained. That's one topic. I'm also a newsie, having my background in the news business. But whatever I'm working on at the moment is the one I'm most passionate about. And I love the miraculous intervention stories. I love things that end well, and I think this is a time we could use a few miraculous interventions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a strange couple of years, Cheryl, hasn't it?
It has been unbelievable, unbelievable. Every time you turn around, there's something new. I've never seen anything like this.
What has been for you the scariest thing that's ever happened to you personally?
The scariest thing that's ever happened to me personally.
Aside from working on CNN.
Yes, that would be right at the top. there were several when I was involved in hot air ballooning, and I had my own hot air balloon and several emergency high wind landings. Trying to avoid power lines and trees, but coming out with just a few scratches, that was scary. I've been on whitewater rafting and thought I wasn't going to make it to the side, out of the water. And I don't know, there are different levels of these kinds of things, near accidents. Where there seemed to be no way to survive an accident. And not too long ago, I did have one of those where I was in one of those turn lanes, which I think are very dangerous in some situations.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And there was I was in an area where I couldn't get over to the right where I needed to get into the lane that I needed, so I just had to wait because of traffic. But yet there was oncoming traffic facing me. And there wasn't a long field of vision in front of me before there was a hill where you couldn't see. And immediately, just out of nowhere, over that little hill, almost in front of me, came two state troopers in their SUVs just flying. There was nowhere for me to go, right or left, nowhere for them to go. And George, just in a flash, those two SUVs, those two state trooper vehicles, had merged into the lane and barely missed me. My car swerved from the wind flow from their passage. So that was a miraculous intervention of sorts.
So some guardian angels out to save you on that one.
Yes, I've had several near accidents like that where there was no explanation for how I survived those.
Are you particularly spiritual?
Yes, spiritual, not religious, but spiritual.
All right, let's go to the phones for you.
You know, you have to have that belief when you've been just so many different things, and there's no way out, and you've come out unscathed.
Open Lines with Cheryl Jones. Rob, truck driving in Ohio. Thanks for calling, Rob. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there.
Hi.
I totally believe in guardian angels and intervention. I've been driving over 40 years. I have over 4 million safe miles on the road.
Wow.
In a semi. And, yes, I could give you several stories. But what I wanted to ask Cheryl was, did you stop to think to ask that gentleman about spontaneous combustion?
Spontaneous combustion, no. But I did ask him about cremation in his research and experimentation and investigation into trying to identify whether the remains was of a female or male, an adult or child. And he said that there's a different energy from the dry blood of a dead body versus the liquid blood of a live body. And also the bones and the teeth give off different energies. It's all about the energy field. But he did say that cremation, I thought perhaps there might not be an energy field from that. And he said actually it was stronger because it was concentrated.
Larry Arnold's been on our program. I got to get him back. He's an expert in spontaneous human combustion, Cheryl. And what a bizarre situation. I mean, absolutely strange. Some people are just sitting there, and they burn up.
I know. I know. It's almost like, what else could happen? It's always something that's so unexplainable and mysterious like that is very, very scary, because what that means is it could happen to any of us.
Oh, you're absolutely right. That's worse than a fever, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I might mention you were talking about something that it was really, really scary a minute ago. Perhaps the night paralysis experiences that I've had, although that's not real as the others in a certain sense or in a certain level, but that can scare the holy heck out of you.
Well, that is scary. And it's, you know, you got to make sure it's not a medical condition.
Well, if it is, I think I'm over it. It's been a number of years since I've had the last one, but I did used to have them fairly regularly.
Next up, let's go to Cornelius in Louisiana, our buddy. Hello there, Cornelius.
Hey there, George and Cheryl. You know, George, I want to say something to everybody. I heard you had a great time in Everett, Washington.
We did.
We got to pray for Stephen Quayle because he gives us some good information. So we need him around.
Yeah, we sure do. He's a great guest. Great guest.
Oh, yes. And all of your guests are great for whatever subject or title that they work on. You know, George, I wanted to talk about Papa tonight because she had that man on Art. And what my dad did, he was a jet engine mechanic in the Air Force. Then he studied, but the first degree he ever got was his embalming license. And then his.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And he was a teenager when he got there. He was the youngest in his class. And that was
he a mortician?
Yes. In Cincinnati, Ohio, they used to have a Cunningham family funeral home in Lexington, Kentucky. And one night when he was working, now the old guys know this, a body can move, but see, it's dead, but all the gases and stuff. And so he's in the funeral home,
oh,
you know, cleaning up and doing things. And so the old Mr. Cunningham, which was a cousin of ours, you can take care of it, White. You just go on and do your business. So he doesn't know that, you know, the body wasn't secure and stuff, and the body actually got up, didn't move. You know how they were laid straight, and then he just moved up, and he burped. And my dad was running out of there, turning over chairs and everything. But I tell you, my dad was something else, and he wanted to talk. I'm so glad you get your mom to come on and stuff every time her birthday rolls around.
She's getting up there in age, though, Corny.
But, Carol, this is what I wanted to ask Carol. Carol, I don't know if you're familiar with me, but
Cheryl,
I was a military
Cheryl.
Police officer, and I was also a federal correctional officer. And I don't know, I heard George say you're an investigative reporter. And I've been trying to clear my name, and George and Tommy's been trying to help me and stuff. Do you work current cases and stuff like that?
No, I do not have a legal license, so I don't do that kind of work.
She goes after stories that Tom and I assign her, or she digs up, those kind of things.
Okay. Hey, George, one more thing I want to ask everybody. Pray for me. Like I said, George.
How's your glucose level?
No, I'm fine. Believe me. I'm eating right, George. I eat vegetables and just a little bit of meat and drink a lot of water. I drink a little sugary drink every now and then. I was just drinking that totally. After Daddy died, I was drinking sweet tea and lemonade, and that's what killed me. Your guests have been right, like Pharmacist Fuchs and the doctor's
Doc Wallach, sure.
It was just the sugary drinks and stuff. But I've fallen short on a little bit of money and stuff, so I need help that way. But anything else, I'm fine. You can tell I'm in good spirits and everything, but my dad's insurance money and stuff is run out, but I'm on the house and everything, so I don't have to worry about a mortgage or nothing.
Good for you. Pay those property taxes.
Well, I got to have some money, George. I mean, I don't have anything.
How old are you?
Once I turned 62.
How old are you now?
Okay, I'm 60 now, so I get Meals on Wheels, so I don't have to worry about food.
Are you working?
I'm not able, George. I'm disabled.
You are. Do you get a little? You get Social Security or something like that?
I will be at 62, but that's 2 years.
That's 2 years away. Yeah, you're gonna need some help now. Thanks, Cordy. I appreciate it. See, we have a tight-knit family here of callers, Cheryl.
Yes, and I wish him all the luck. And like he said, times are tough. A lot of people need help, and he certainly does, and he deserves it, and I sure hope that he can get his name cleared the way he wants to.
We tried when President Trump was there, but it didn't work out, and I don't know anybody in this administration that would be able to do that, so we'll see what happens in 24.
Yes, not at, this administration doesn't really look like... they're looking for people to help that much, unfortunately.
Next up, let's go to Joe in Monterey, California. Hello, Joe.
Thank you, George.
Sure.
This show is interesting. I didn't expect to have so much in-depth study with a person like the person interviewed. This is a question for Cheryl and you too, George. In your interviews with people, they seem to know at an early age that they were going to do what they're doing. Do you think that they were prepared from a past life or maybe in between lives before they incarnate to do what they're doing?
I wanted to be a broadcaster when I was 11 years old. You know, maybe I was a past broadcaster. Who knows, Cheryl?
Maybe you were. Well, you were the youngest news director in the country at age 28, weren't you?
Yep. Yep, back in Minneapolis.
And that's a pretty young age.
Oh, it sure was.
That was when you were trying to hire me, right?
I was the executive producer at Channel 2 in Detroit, WJBK, when I tried to get you hired by... If I were the news director, I would have hired you. I was the executive producer, and I was trying to convince the management to hire you. I said, look at her tapes. She knows what she's doing. She's very presentable. And we came close, by the way.
Yes, and that was at a time, George, when I was beginning to think that I needed to go back to the news side because I had done weather as a weather reporter, and eventually later on I went back to school and acquired my degree in meteorology, thinking that, you know, at least I would have a choice of what to do as the years rolled by. So I tried to do as much as I could in every area of the newsroom.
If you went back to Kansas City and walked down the streets, would you get recognized?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I would. it was a crazy time. There were billboards all over the place, and at one time someone had taken down a billboard somehow and put it on the side of his house. And there were all kinds of different things going on.
When you went to CNN, were you doing meteorology, or because you were an anchor person too?
Well, I started to say I did both. I actually, the one reason when I left Kansas City at that time, when you and I had communication, I had decided I needed to go back to the news side. I was getting too stereotyped, in my view.
Yeah.
And I really loved news. I had a talk show, which I produced and hosted early on in my career, and I absolutely loved it. And once it gets into your blood system and your bloodstream, you can't get it out. So I always knew that I didn't want to be confined, not to undermine weather. It's really, truly, truly a different art, a different skill, totally. It's all ad lib, or it was then. Everything's on your feet. You're responding by the second to every time cue. You know, it's a different magical act. And I loved it, and I could have gone on forever in it. I was the first woman to do weather in New York City. My station had sent me there when I worked with Metro Media.
Oh, good for you. Did you ever meet Ted Turner?
Yes, I did. I met him when he was...
What a genius he was. Still is.
Absolutely. And Jane Fonda, before they were married.
Yeah, they're split up now, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. But, boy, my station in St. Louis was one of the first in the country to work with him when he started CNN, because at that point, he didn't have any crews and markets. So he would go to local TV stations to try to cut a deal to get video on events that would happen in St. Louis, for example. So we were one of the first to sign up with him, and we'd send him video. The folks at NBC went nuts because we were an NBC station. But Ted Turner loved it. He was the guy was a genius. Started in the billboard business.
He did. From his father, yes. He started in the billboard business, and then he started at Techwood in Atlanta. And by the time I ended up going to CNN, I was working at WAGA in Atlanta, the CBS affiliate. And I was looking for a way to move on from there. And I first talked with Burt Reinhart, who was then the president, the original president of CNN. And he wanted to hire me and wanted to know when my contract was up. As you know, you can't negotiate until you get to a certain point in your contract at the end. So I made a deal with the general manager of WAGA at the time and the acting news director, that they would let me work at CNN on weekends while I continued full-time over at AGA, which was unheard of at that time. You didn't cross the track like that. So that was kind of novel.
Did you ever work with my buddy Don Harrison at CNN?
I didn't work with him, but he worked at Headline News, which was down one level down from the main news department, which was where I worked upstairs. But I knew him. I crossed paths with him. There was a common cafeteria where, you know, you'd run into anybody and everybody who worked there.
Great guy. So, died of cancer.
Yes, very, very nice guy. And that's a sad story, too, that he had to
He was a great guy. Stay with us, Cheryl. We're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, my guest will be Kevin Anderson. We'll talk a little bit about science fiction. He was a writer for The X-Files and Star Wars and all kinds of great things. And then we'll have those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines for you. And welcome back to Coast, back with our final segment with Cheryl Jones and your phone calls. Cheryl, any follow-up to those birds that have been dropping out of the sky? Have you heard any updates on that?
Yes, the latest I've heard and that I've seen is that there is still nothing conclusive. They are still advising people to just forego the bird baths and anything that might attract a community of birds in your backyard.
Strange story.
For the time being, yes. And I did receive from one of our listeners from that particular show just recently that he had thought that after finding a couple of dead birds, small birds, in his backyard, that maybe it was the bird seed he had bought that had raisins in it, and he thought that the high heat and humidity might have created a situation that led to the bacteria, and that the birds may have eaten that. I mean, that was his theory. So I thought that was an interesting concept.
Well, were they falling out of the sky, or did the people find them just dead on the ground?
Mainly dead, because they're small, and they really weren't falling out of the sky like they were in the last year down in the Southwest. During that kind of a bird death and bird drop situation. But in this particular case, they were smaller birds, songbirds, and so on, and they weren't literally falling out of the sky, because generally they said that birds of that size generally would just kind of get weak and they'd land, and you just find them dead on the sidewalk or in the backyard. A lot of people were finding them in their backyards with that runny eye situation, where it looked like the eye was infected, and that was the uniqueness that was associated with this one, whereas the previous bird death or bird drop situation last year, they thought was related to weather, perhaps, to the drought, and therefore starvation and possibly a forced situation with early migration.
All right, let's go to the phones. Roger's with us, truck driving in Indiana. Hey, Raj, welcome to the show.
Hi, George.
Hey there.
I have been studying all the past flus back to the 1582 outbreak, and there is one similarity with all of them. And I was wondering if you've ever looked into the fact that COVID might be something else besides a virus. It might be an X or something.
Interesting. What do you think of that, Cheryl?
Something else besides the virus? And he said it might be a what?
Go ahead, Raj.
It's an exosome, E-X-O-S-O-M-E. And it's actually a communication between our cells, C-E-L-L-S.
I still think COVID was concocted in a laboratory in Wuhan, China. And a lot of people are backing me up on that now.
My vote would be with that as well. It seems to me it's too... there are too many specific things that would make it hard to think that it's an accident in terms of the design, because, they can't really duplicate the original or the organic makeup of the virus. And it just seems like with all the money that was put into the gain of function, which has been going on for a long time for some strange reason, and my understanding is that the conditions were not that great at the Wuhan laboratory with the requirements, and that perhaps may have been the reason that research was done there as opposed to in the United States at the University of North Carolina or otherwise. So it just seems like maybe an accident happened, maybe there was an accidental leak or something, but it's so specifically designed, and we keep getting these variants and everything. I don't know.
Well, it's been dropping, though, 25% drop in the last couple of weeks. That's a good sign.
That's a good sign. The strange thing to me, they seem to have never been able to validate the COVID test. And if you can't validate the tests, then how can you build all of these mandates around a test that you can't validate, or that changes every time you turn around, or you have a lot of false positives?
Yep, absolutely. Let's go to Turtle, truck driving in Indiana as well. Turtle, you might drive right by Roger. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George.
Hi, Turtle.
Cheryl.
Hope you're doing well.
Hey, I have to first say that being born an empath, your last guest gets my full endorsement. She rang all the bells and tooted all the whistles. Anybody who's a little curious or needs the help to learn how to protect themselves, to be able to get a grip on being an empath, I recommend her work highly.
Good. Yes,
Cheryl, George said you're going to be on for Thanksgiving. And I would like to make a show suggestion, or at least a basic topic suggestion. Are you open to that?
Sure, we're open to everything.
Okay, Now, when I think of Thanksgiving, of course, traditionally, you know, we think of the Pilgrims in Salem and things like that. Maybe if you think you might be able to find something that would be interesting for us, to go back to that time in history and look at the paranormal things that occurred in that general area of, you know, Salem, Massachusetts, New York, in that general area, because that's where we were all founded from back in the day, and see if you could find some stories that might be really cool for Thanksgiving.
Interesting thing. Or if not, Cheryl, the two-hour guest before you, right? That's possible, too.
That's possible. That's a good suggestion.
What do you think of the Salem witch trials?
Well, I'm glad we've moved beyond that. I hope that everything doesn't work in cycles like some people think and that we don't return to that. You know, talk about censorship and a double standard and jumping to conclusions and projection of crimes. It was just really, really a sad time. I'm just glad we've moved beyond that.
Let's go to Mike in Livermore, California. Welcome to the program. Michael, it's been a while. How are you?
George, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Your Oakland Raiders that have moved to Vegas are doing well.
Oh, man, I'm loving it. You're having a great time. And that, my Giants, boy, they're just unstoppable.
But my Lions, they ain't doing well at all.
Yeah, I don't see a bet going on in our future this time.
No, not this year.
Anyway, Cheryl, question. With your in relationship to your time with CNN, and you know, with the stuff coming out from the Veritas project and stuff, with the guy running the show, and I was curious about, it's pretty much now truth, and we know it, that it, a lot of it is top down reporting. In other words, you're almost told what to report and everything. But I'm more curious about back in the day when you were there early on. Was that obvious to you, or was it just something, you know, I'm not going political on this, left or right. Believe me, they're all against us. I understand that. But I'm more curious in the fact of what we are actually getting in the way of news is, were reporters back then told not to touch stories?
You weren't told not to, or at least in my experience, every newsroom is different, and every management team is different, and every, you know, so you go with what you have. But we were never directly told, in my experience, the places I've worked, not to report on a certain topic or any restrictions that way. However, when you're in that environment, you innately know what is acceptable and what isn't. You know, if you suggest a story to the assignment desk, you know which stories are going to have a good chance of making, you know, being approved and getting a green light, and which stories aren't. So we didn't have the kind of blatant double standards and blatant exposure of corruption and in our high levels of government like we have seen now and like is being reported now. So it was a different time, and we weren't really living on the edge like we are now.
You know who I met today, Cheryl? Former NBC newsman Bob Jimenez.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that was way back during the Brokaw days. I mean,
oh, absolutely, absolutely. We didn't really feel like there was such hypocrisy in the news. I've always felt that if you just wanted to highlight hypocrisy in the news, all you had to do was use the news of the day and just pick two different opinions. But today, it's become more of a political kind of news gathering operation across the board, almost, with anchors choosing to be political advocates as opposed to just reporting simply the news and allowing a civil debate on any issue that has more than one side, and that is not healthy, in my view, for anybody. The narrative that's shut down, people who are silenced with only one narrative being allowed to be, in the social media platform and also reported on the news generally. It wasn't like that in the past.
First-time caller Stan in Vermilion, South Dakota. Hey, Stanley, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
I talked to your screener about a half a dozen different topics, and I don't know which one she wants me to talk to you about.
Well, you pick the one you want.
Well, we kind of decided about 10 years ago I solved a murder in my hometown.
Wow, how'd you do that?
Well, it was really common sense, and I'll try to be brief. There's a Vietnam veteran, a day worker, real nice guy, drank a little beer, but never bothered anybody. He was murdered one night. He was my neighbor.
Oh, jeez.
And about 6 weeks before, I met this guy that lived in the northern part of the complex, and he sent shivers up my spine. I got to be careful. And I said, boy, there's something evil in this guy. And so about 6 weeks later, Tom was killed, and it was a big deal. I was in a neighboring town. I come home. There's the yellow lines all around the sea, and I thought a gas pipe had busted. I just went to sleep. The next morning, there's 500 people, news reporters, everything.
Wow.
They said, do you know what happened? I said, no. They said, Tom was. And I said, well, I think I know who did it. When the officer interviewed me, oh, well, why do you say that? I said, it's just. And the guy that did the murdering went on TV and said, how could something like this happen?
Oh, my God. But you were, was he convicted? Were you right?
Oh, yeah. See, they got a big CSI truck there and everything. Right between the two apartments where the murder took place and this guy lived, and they still couldn't find any clues. So I convinced the officer to get a search warrant about 3 weeks after it happened. They went into his apartment. The bloody knife was still there, his bloody
tattoo. Oh, my God. You hit that stand right on the head. We're out of time, but what a story. My gosh. Something like that. I mean, he's his own forensic investigator, Cheryl.
He is. That's what he ought to get a job doing.
We will hear from you on Thursday, right before Ghost to Ghost, which will be the following Friday. It's hard to believe Halloween is up next, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Time flies. Where is it going?
You got it. Cheryl, take care of yourself. Keep in touch. Cheryl Jones, our investigative reporter in I love these open line formats with her because it just gives us all a chance to sit back and free flow and everything else. And on our program tomorrow, we're going to talk a little bit about science fiction. Before we get into those, Friday night into Saturday morning, open lines. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.